Now, for a good while now, movies, games and music have been something that you download or you subscribe to. So why are more and more people turning to vinyl, CDs and even board games? Well, writer Sarah Maria Griffin is living that physical media life and she's here now to chat all about it. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's absolutely our pleasure because this is something that I really and truly want to talk about because it's something I can definitely get involved in. But how would you describe the pull of physical media in 2025?
I think it's really important to people to own the things they're watching and listening to.
Yeah.
Because it's become pretty increasingly apparent that any day, any of the streamers, any of the big giants could just disappear your favourite show off of the service, never to be found again.
It's the most heartbreaking thing.
You might log on one day and the X-Files are gone forever. That has affected some of us very seriously.
let's move to music for a second, right? How did a secondhand car change the way that you listen to music?
Well, at our ripe old ages of 21, we got our first car this year, and it didn't have a Bluetooth organization in it because the car's nearly older than us. But it did go forward and go backwards, and that's
so
all you need.
A to B.
But it did have a CD player. Okay. So it was kind of the first time we found ourselves staring down the barrel of a CD player in many, many years. So we thought, well, we're hardly going to just kind of fritter along without any tunes.
Yeah.
So myself and my husband started digging up the albums that we loved once before in charity shops and then in secondhand record stores, and found ourselves collecting this lovely little tower of albums that we had once loved and had definitely lost over multiple apartments and life moving on. And in the car, we found ourselves listening to albums back to back and top to tail, and it really changed our experience and brought it back to what it used to be in terms of listening to albums. Instead of just kind of flicking around Spotify and hopping from tune to tune, which again is great.
Yeah.
It's really something to kind of go all the way through an album and even through a new album.
I need to know, have you got like a whole sleeve of CDs or what are you doing? Like, what's the organisation system in the car?
It's desperate. It's the glove compartment. We haven't got a book or anything. We were more organised with CDs back when we were first listening to them when we were teenagers. Now we're just kind of jamming them in the glove department and hoping for the best, you know.
I used to love that so much. And then you remember like someone would have a really fancy car that would have the CD player in the boot and you'd hear that for if you were changing over to tracks, you'd be like, but I think it's on disc 4. I think this is where it's going.
That's,
so many people are not going to know what we're talking
about. The ones that play the multiple discs now, that's real business. That's real technology.
You mentioned there as well about like the type of music that you listen to. You're obviously listening to old music that you would have listened to growing up, but you're listening to new albums as well.
Yeah, so going into the small handful of standing record stores and CD shops, I guess, and going in and buying Midwest Princess or Short and Sweet, you know, and buying a new artist's new CD is shocking and it's exciting.
It's the joy.
It's a novelty in itself. So your own, and you're also in a way voting for them with your money, because Spotify, as we all know, doesn't really pay for the songs that they didn't pay the artists. So you know, at least when you're handing over, you know, 12 or 18 euro for a CD, that it's somehow in the long road back through royalties, it's getting back towards the artist who made it.
We've covered this like in a multitude of ways on the show about like how hard it is for artists to make money, that artists are even like, they're paying to go out on tours, that they're paying for venues themselves. They're not making any money off the back of it purely because they used to make all the money off record sales, and that just doesn't really happen anymore. Vinyl has been very trendy for a few years. You know, everybody was obsessed with vinyl. Do you think that CDs are having their comeback now?
Well, look, I think I'm a big admirer of vinyl. I think I'm probably not enough of a music head, generally speaking, to get a player and keep
collect.
It's a very careful and very respectful way of listening to music that I feel that I am not. I'm not that. I'm simply not that person.
Shove a CD in the glove box and hope for the best kind of gal.
Listen to the plastic crack as you try and ram it closed is more where I'm at. But the thing about vinyl is that the industry catches on very quickly to where the demand is. Vinyl's ferociously expensive. And certainly those pieces are gorgeous, and the different kinds of vinyl that you can get with different patterns on the record itself. Like, there's so many opportunities to make that a beautiful piece. But that's also not really accessible. You know, that's for diehards.
Yeah, you're not going to play vinyl in your car.
You know, so I'm a big, big proponent of people getting out here and collecting CDs again. In any charity shop that you walk into, there will simply be a wall of CDs for 50p. And you could buy more copies of Robbie Williams' Millennium than you would know what to do. you know.
Such a specific track as well. Like, it's fantastic. Let's go with this album. Let's talk about gaming, Sarah, because you're also into old games. What's the appeal there?
So for me, as somebody who grew up playing video games, I cover them now as a journalist. As a young person, they were an unattainable object.
Yeah.
You know, in the mid-90s, a Nintendo system or a PlayStation system was something that you got, and then 7 years later, you might get the next one.
Maybe.
Maybe, if you were lucky. If you acted interested enough.
Yeah.
And made sure it got the use, you know. And you might have a handful, two or three video games, because the games themselves were maybe £70 each. Like, yeah, they were extraordinarily expensive objects, and you would trade with people or rent them from the Extravision. This all sounds like I'm talking about 100 years ago, but it's...
In our lifetime.
Yeah. And like, it was how we dealt with physical media. Yeah. You know, they were sparse. We didn't have everything at our fingertips. So now, in our secondhand car life as grown-ups,
yeah,
being able to hunt down and find the games that we once played and hold them and have them and play them as they were, yeah, meant to be played on their original consoles is deeply, deeply satisfying. It's also an act of archiving. Video games, as we know, GameStop recently disappeared off the high street. Mm. It's very, the only stores in which you can purchase new video games anymore are very, very limited. They're toy shops.
Yeah.
As a medium, they are a physical medium, they are disappearing, because the way that video games are sold is through the consoles on the online, yeah, stores. So people don't own copies of the games they're playing. So if these online stores become obsolete or shut down, all the games that are there are no longer accessible to the public.
Yeah, you don't have them anymore.
No one has them then. Do you? Or maybe, yeah, one or two. It's hard to keep archives. It's hard to keep track. So archiving video games, because they are the most widely used form of entertainment in the world. Mm-hmm. They are the most, it's the biggest, the most expensive industry of entertainment in the world. It's bigger than we can imagine. But there's so little effort to preserve its history. There are museums here and there that have put in a lot of work to maintain preservation of cartridges, mm-hmm, which do expire after a while. And these consoles that otherwise would be rotting in attics, and to make sure that the lineage of the technology is preserved. Because otherwise it's just rubbish.
I would give anything for another go of a Sega Mega Drive and to play Sonic on it.
Stall the ball, go on, my gaffer.
I know, great. No problem. So no, like, there's just this different level of joy of hearing Sega.
Oh, you beautiful, you know, and to feel the controller in your hands.
Yeah,
nothing like that.
There was also when I graduated to PS1, like, the very first PlayStation, but I didn't know how to care for the games, because I was so used to, at that point, cassettes, and like the Sega games were in little boxes.
They were, they're cartridges.
And they honestly were indestructible. And then you got this flimsy CD, and it was like scratches all over
it. Just leave it on the kitchen table face, yeah, down. It's fine. And if the cartridge didn't work, you just blew into it and, yeah, got rid of the dust. Yeah.
Done. And it always worked. No problem. Let's talk about like buying all this stuff, okay? Like, online, in shops, you've mentioned loads of charity shops going around there. Like, are there specific places online that we can go if I wanted to, like, get my hands on a Sega Mega Drive or a PS1 or something like that? Do they exist?
They do. I would encourage people, if they are interested, I suppose, yeah, is to hunt, to look for lots, to look for people getting rid of, you know, bits and pieces out of their attics, yeah, on Dundeal or on Facebook Marketplace. For Christmas, my husband found me an extraordinarily rare Daft Punk DVD.
Oh, class.
Yeah, amazing, that he had found on somebody's Facebook Marketplace. He was selling a bunch of music DVDs. Yeah. And so if you are curious, and if there are individual pieces that you're looking for, like a copy of Sonic the Hedgehog on the Sega Mega Drive,
yeah,
go hunting for it, and it's not likely to set you back very much, because the worth of these things is also personal. You know, it might not be worth very much to the person who's selling it, but it might be worth a lot to you.
Yeah,
you know?
And as you said, it's like you're doing your own archive of these things that's, yeah, going to live on for generations and stuff. Is there a lot of the appeal of this? Is it the idea of maybe finding a hidden gem in the midst of it all? Like, you spoke there about your Daft Punk, you know, DVD. Like, is it something like that?
Right. So you might have personal hidden gems, but there also are obviously collector's items and things that have accrued value over time. You only have to walk into any CEX store in any shopping centre in Ireland, and you'll find a wall of vintage video games, the price of which would, you know, put the fear into you. An original copy of Pokemon Red for €900. There are gems in the wild. Yeah, for real. That would be a damaged one. You
need,
know,
my mother to listen up right now and get up into that attic.
Up there.
Clear it down, because, yeah, we had all of this stuff when I was growing up.
Like. So there are gems that would be, I would say they would have worth, but I would always, yeah, discourage people from that, because that fluxes and changes. I would say to look for the things that mattered most to you and try and hold on to them.
Yeah.
Because if they only exist in streaming services, they can disappear just as quickly as they were there.
Yeah.
you know, and having a copy in your home without veering into clutter or, you know, having too much stuff around, it's nice to own the object instead of to just assume that it will always be there at the click of a finger.
The storm was so horrible last week and a lot of people were out of all their electricity, but even when the electricity came back, I know my mom has her electricity back but her Wi-Fi isn't working yet. So if you think about it, like, yeah, having a board game and music would be fab, but like having a DVD, just to be able to lash that on, like, so, handy.
Yeah, and though, and DVDs especially are at that moment right now in culture where they have just become so, so cheap. You can walk into almost any secondhand DVD, into any CEX, it's the last remaining kind of secondhand media store that we have. Walls of DVD. For my mother for Christmas, I was picking up something and I walked into a CEX in Northside and there was this wall of Doctor Who DVDs. Somebody had obviously just come in and traded in their whole collection. So I could pick out all the ones from Tom Baker, my mum's favourite, and picked out, you know, 7 or 8 DVDs very specifically of these episodes that you wouldn't be able to find otherwise. You, in terms of hidden gems and personal favourites, people have handed over their whole houses full of digital media and they're just sitting there for a couple of euro each. So if there was ever a time to begin a collection or to start to build your own archive, it's now, because it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg.
Do you prefer that now? Would you prefer, like, you know, at the weekends, like throwing on like a DVD or listening to, obviously you're listening to CDs in your car a lot of the times, like, do you prefer that to your smart speaker and all that kind of stuff at home, or do you think that they go hand in hand?
Hand in hand.
Yeah,
absolutely. There'd be certain things I can't find. There'd be certain things I want to lash on quickly for my daughter. You know, there's instantaneousness and then there's ceremony. But for video games, we always try our best to load up old consoles and to try and play the games as they were meant to be played originally. For music, we listen to CDs in the car. We haven't quite turned back fully to the DVDs all the time yet. I mean, the streaming services are so easy. But if the power ever went out, we know that we could.
Yeah. Well, if the Wi-Fi went out. Power, not so much. Power still needed. It's interesting because last year, myself and my other half started watching One Tree Hill again and then it came off the player. So then we were insta-bind because we were like, where did we watch this? And it doesn't exist anywhere. Like, you cannot find it. And it was one of the biggest cult TV shows of its time. So we ended up buying 2 sets of box sets because one of the box sets that we bought was missing, you know, season 1, 3 and 5. And then the other one was missing like season 7 and 9. So together we like mashed them and I was like,
patchwork.
Yeah. So, and they look really, really nice in my house. I'm like, yeah, no, big One Tree Hill fans. It's gone back on the player since. So, but there's a different feel and there's a different look to it when you're watching it in its old format, as opposed to it being reconfigured to the size of the tellies that we have now.
Exactly. And there's also the autoplay thing that happens sometimes on streamers where you get sort of corrected by an algorithm into, you might like this show or you might like this show, and suddenly the television's been on for 8 hours and you're like, I don't even know what I'm watching anymore. Whereas there's something kind of pleasant about being like, okay, we watched 1 episode of this.
But also you have to, because it's a lot more work, it doesn't just roll into the next one. You have to press back, you have to go down, you have to go into the next episode.
You have to look at the menu screens with the menu music.
God bless the menu screens. Sarah Marie Griffin, thank you so much for coming in and talking about the joys of just old media today. It was fab.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be right back after these. Thanks a million.